carried out his threats in a very premeditated and cold-blooded fashion.
We're going to play part two of this conversation tomorrow. We're going to continue the conversation after the show. I want to thank Dr. Mohammed Abu Saha, father of Hassan and Yusuf, Mohammed Abu Saha, who was shot dead last year. And I want to thank our guests, Rami and Victoria, for joining us from Tulsa. This is part one. Stay tuned for part two. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Todos somos parte de tu comunidad.
Todos los días entramos y salimos de la vida de cada cual.
Es fácil dar por sentados los momentos que conforman nuestro día a día.
Algunos son buenos,
otros no tanto,
pero así es la vida.
Cuando algo no te parece bien,
es hora de prestar atención.
Porque solo tú sabes lo que no debería ser parte de tu día a día. Protege tu día a día.
Si ves algo sospechoso, avísales a las autoridades locales.
Yes, and if you see something, definitely say something. No matter what language it is you speak, we'll find a way to get whatever you're seeing out there as far as if it's a warning or something. But what I see is that it's 6:01, and that means that it's time for Off the Wall right here at WUSB Stonybrook. Yes, this is Off the Wall. I know I'm on the radio and I'm speaking. This is Off the Wall. I'm Kyle. Over there, it is Emmanuel right beside me. And you can also check WSB.FM for streams, playlists, and other information.
Okay, let's not start with a mistruth. I'm not right beside you. I'm all the way across the room on the other side of the room.
You're with me, though. You are right
in
here.
In spirit, yes, but we're not even breathing the same oxygen. I mean, I'm waving at you. It's probably a delay in the time you see me because of the speed of light. The speed of light doesn't go as fast as our senses.
Not in the studio because it's a station. It's a station, y'all.
Do you think anything
and we're
goes
in
faster?
Space. Yeah?
Do you think anything goes faster than the speed of light?
Neutrinos.
Well, neutrinos, they just kind of exist. But I don't think they go through matter. They go through solid objects and things like that. But I don't know if they move faster than the speed of light.
Okay. Yeah. Qubit. No. There are things that they've found that are particles surrounding light that go fast. They think might go fast, but they haven't ever recorded it, right? They being whatever.
They being science. They being us, because we're humans and we only have a limited perception, you know, as to how things work.
And we're in it together. We're bound to find out as a species.
Yeah, I suppose.
And the pejorative, the collective.
Well, you know, Douglas Adams said it well once when he wrote that nothing travels faster than bad news. And in the future, they actually were fueling ships with bad news to get them to go places quicker. And the only problem was nobody was ever happy to see the people when they got there. But they did move fast.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a concept. Well, you have to think outside the box if you're ever going to figure things out.
We
have to break the barrier. We have to break the speed. We're not going to do it this hour, I know that. But we do have to break the speed of light, because otherwise, you know, can you turn that damn phone off?
We're already getting a phone call because someone's going to tell us about things that are faster than the speed of light.
Yeah, someone's already figured it out. Okay, you know what? You can call the next show and tell them how you figured out how to go faster than the speed of light.
Well,
what I'm trying to say is we need to go faster than the speed of light, because if we don't, what's the point of looking at all the stars all the time? It's like mocking us, you know? It's there all the time saying, here, you can't get to us. We're here. We're going to look at you and through eternity, and
right,
you will never reach us.
Right.
I mean, is nature that cruel? Is the universe that cruel?
Hopefully not. I mean, it's poetic and it's bittersweet, I think, but I don't think cruel. I think it's more beautiful than anything else. I think love has a lot to do with that too. But yeah, we've got some cool things going on, though, as far as propulsion in space. I was watching some things about the Dawn spacecraft and the capabilities of this ion drive, which is a really fascinating form of transportation. Not exactly something that goes fast, per se, or can push a lot at once, but it is useful for satellites.
Uh-huh.
Dawn, if you don't know, is a space probe that has gone to several different places, I believe.
Dawn?
Dawn, D-A-W-N.
Dawn.
Dawn.
That's how we say it, Dawn. I say Dawn.
Dawn.
Who's that, Dawn?
Oh, yeah, was I pronouncing it like D-O-N, like somebody you know named Dawn?
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
No, it's not named after the presidential candidate.
The people on NASA were saying Dawn. I was like, what's this Dawn thing?
Dawn.
That's how else would you say it? I don't want to get into regionalisms, but come on, people.
Well, I'm glad you changed the subject, because I forgot where it was going.
You
anyway.
Were going on an ion drive or something.
No, I forgot where Dawn actually was researching, so forget that. Anyway, it's really interesting. Look it up. Speaking of things you can look up that are also exciting about NASA, they opened up all their research online. Did you see this news story?
I did see this, and you know, I hate to profess ignorance. Usually people do that for me, I thought they already had done that. I mean, I thought their research was open. I didn't know it was closed. So we can basically look at their notes and figure out what they're up to, and what's the significance?
Well, it is maybe not so much that they were not open in the past. This isn't it's not a parallel to, like, maybe a company setting up a way for you to understand their processes and trade secrets and so on and so forth. But this is, you know, NASA is a government charter, an organization, and in that they have a mandate to report to the public. It's publicly funded research, therefore it's our research, similar to the way the FCC works and public airwaves, same ideas. So being that funding was public and something that the American public paid for, we should be able to look at it, similar to the way we can look up things with what, you know, Library of Congress and these other institutions. So that being said, what they've done, so they are open in a lot of ways, but they didn't really have a platform or a portal. So what my understanding is they've created a web portal or a site where you can go, log in, create an account, and otherwise interface with a lot, the vast, I'm sure, amount of information that they have that had not sort of been organized in the same way, had not been accessible through a public-facing website.
Wow.
So anyway, maybe it's searchable. Maybe there's functions for people who are interested in scholarly stuff. Students, I'm sure, might be interested in getting really, instead of just being able to search press releases, which I kind of feel is about as much as you could really get from NASA's website in the past, now you can really get in depth and look at some of their articles and actually some of their research, the real nuts and bolts of what they do, which I think is an amazing ability. And who knows what the public, what the all the people on the internet will be able to do with all of that information, and look out for interesting uses of it. The other thing I was going to talk about was the replacement for Hubble, which is amazing, and it's a giant space telescope. But I won't get into that.
No, I'm curious about that, because I've been following Hubble ever since before its inception.
Well,
and I'm just amazed that Hubble doesn't stay up there forever. I guess everything runs out of usable usefulness, I suppose.
Well, I was actually looking up a certain kind of tape that's used in electronics. It's actually the same material that's used in computers, like ribbons and the printable circuits. It's a material called Kapton. Anyway, the reflective coating on this new telescope's or on its sunshade is the same material that's used in circuit boards and flexible circuits and so on. So then that made me, of course, as the internet tends to do, that made me stumble upon another story about the new space telescope. But I forgot the actual acronym for it.
Hubble is easy to remember, because that's what it's called, but it's probably named after somebody, spacefaring person.
John, I'm so terrible.
Called John Telescope. It's a last name, right? It's not some guy's first name. And I hope it stays up there longer than Hubble apparently will.
It's an acronym, JWST, Space Telescoping.
Oh, come on. We're not calling it the JWST telescope, are we? We can't pronounce that. Wow. Well, okay. What makes it better? You said it was pretty awesome.
James Webb. That's it.
James Webb
Space Telescope.
So it's the Webb telescope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me it's got two B's in the word Webb, right? That makes it cooler somehow.
Yeah,
it does. Oh, look at that.
It's
okay.
James Webb. Yeah. Okay. So it is much bigger. Let's see. I'm looking at the page now.
Okay,
2018 is when it's going to launch.
I'm not calling it James Webb. It's got one name. I'm not using a proper first last name for a telescope. It's the Webb telescope. That's what it's going to be called. I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah. And so, anyway, this is the current. That's the scale. There's basically, instead of one large reflective mirror, it's going to have these sort of honeycomb or hexagonal six sides. Is that a hexagon? Anyway, it's going to have these an array of panels that themselves build up to the reflective mirror. And that makes it, I think, a little bit more modular. It'll be a gold-plated coating on top of the mirror surface. And it's kind of interesting. So the Hubble reflective mirror was one giant piece, which made it, I think, a lot more susceptible to damage, harder to replace, and very big as far as handling, shipping and handling, as it were, is, you know, in this context of space, is, right. is logistically important. If this cracks or something breaks, you can't replace it. But the mirror on the JWST is going to be built up of a series of these different reflective surfaces. And you know what? It reminds me of is a bug eye.
Yeah, I was going to say it looks like an insect.
It
type
is
eye.
Totally like the eye of an insect. But it's much larger. It's about maybe 3 people tall and several people wide, and quite a bit larger surface area than Hubble. And this is going to allow us to look deeper and further into space. It's really cool.
Wow.
So anyway, that is all from looking up Captain Tape this afternoon, because I need some for some other things.
You mean you started this whole saga by looking up tape, and
yeah.
you wound up looking at interstellar telescopes.
Yeah, because this tape is really great. It's good for electronics because it has very high temperature tolerances. And in fact, this same tape is used on satellites and stuff. So
wow.
Hopefully it'll hold together my little project.
So my question then is, the Webb telescope is
yes.
going up in 2018.
That is the anticipated launch date. Is a massive upgrade to Hubble.
How is it an upgrade or a replacement?
A replacement.
So they're gonna,
Hubble has been upgraded in the past.
They're going to blow up Hubble or fire upon it or something. I think this telescope should destroy the other telescope. I think that'd be kind of cool. But my question to you is, 2018, that's 2 years from now, how are we getting up there? Because Hubble was launched on the Space Shuttle Discovery, I believe. Okay, so we don't have the space shuttles anymore. So who's gonna carry the thing up there?
That is a good question. It is going to be on an Ariane 5 rocket.
I didn't know the Arians had rockets.
And it's going to be folded up basically like a pretzel inside
oh,
of a very
wow.
large capsule. And it then, I believe, unfolds. So all those little sensor panels that form the reflective surface kind of fold up, and they're in sort of packed into the what you might think of as the center line of the rocket, I guess, for stability. Because if one of those breaks or something happens, then it doesn't unfold properly when they're actually at altitude. But presumably, again, because they're modular, they could then either easily replace one or more of those different panels. But anyway, it's going to fold up in the top of a rocket. And the Ariane 5, I don't know anything about those rockets, but anyway, they're, I believe, going to be still within ESA and the three space agencies, CESA, ESA, and NASA. I don't know what CSA is. Canadian. Oh, well, of course.
Wow, God. The Canadians are involved.
Wow, how could I forget? No, of course. So ESA, the Canadians, and NASA are working on this together, and... And anyway, so it's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be going up on any sort of like private, some of the other rockets that we've been looking at, the ones that return on their own and all that. I think that's still in testing. They really want those to be ready for human, Orion-type capsules and stuff for human spaceflight. So, yeah, this is going to be on a different rocket platform, probably still run by space agencies, like public space agencies.
We just got a text from Steve Kretzer, our friend, who sends us this picture of new listeners to the show who are looking upwards to Hubble right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is great.
A bunch of deer in the field, upstate, I guess.
That's great.
We couldn't do that a few years ago, have pictures sent to us from different places while we were on the radio.
Wow, course, when you say it that way, that is kind of cool.
Isn't that cool? But you have to know our phone number for that particular thing, and we don't.
There's been a couple of you and I were joking about that this morning, fighting with robots. I mean, a couple of years ago we wouldn't have said that, and I was theorizing that, you know, in a couple more years it would, you know, fighting with robots might have a whole other meaning. So
well, and I'm saying that the meaning that it could have in a few years is the exact meaning that it would have had if you said it 10 years ago. I'm having a big fight with robots. That entails something really catastrophic and horrible. But I said that today because I am having a fight with 2 robots at the moment. But they're disc robots. They're encoding CDs and things like that.
You just called them stupid, didn't you?
No. I just said that they're nice. They're not stupid. They know what they're doing. They're assigned to that particular task. They're not self-aware. They have not turned on me. But in 10 years, I think that is entirely possible. Just as decades ago, when we talked about robots in the future, that's exactly how we perceived they would be.
Well, they are devouring DVD drives, so hopefully hopefully that doesn't the next DVD drive doesn't actually make them sentient. But no, that's wow. They're containable. Mm-hmm. We have them contained at the moment.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
Well, okay, we made it 23 minutes without talking about Trump, and that's good. No, it's good. I don't want to go too long because it's a strain. It's hard. It takes a lot out of us. And next week, I think we should go for 25 minutes and, you know, keep it going.
Okay.
By the time January rolls around, do you think in a year, I'm just curious, and let's speak to ourselves a year from now, 2017 Off the Wall hosts, hey, Kyle, 2017.
Hello.
What, are you supposed to be Kyle from 2017? You're in 2016. I see you right there on the other side of the room. Come on, I'm not stupid. Now, you can talk to 2017. 2017 cannot talk to you. All right? I'm saying hi to you then. You can reply to me a year from now, but you can't reply to me now unless you're talking to me in the same year.
Well, maybe I have a direct connection with myself in the future, I was just relaying that.
This is why we don't go faster than the speed of light, because we can't even get time travel between 1 year down. All right, so listen, 1 year from now, I'm talking to Kyle of 2017, and me too. Hi, Emmanuel of 2017. Do you not talk of Trump anymore? Is it over? Has the reign of stupidity ended? Are you actually talking about issues now? Have you not heard a Donald Trump quote today, meaning whatever day in August this is a year from now? Or has the opposite happened and it's just Trump everywhere? I mean, I'm curious, and I intend to, to basically answer this question a year from now. But Kyle, 2016, what do you think? Do you think a year from now it'll be a different world or a very sad world or a world at all?
We very well could be online getting Trump rations.
Well, I wish they did have Trump rations, because they have not been rationing Trump, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It could be over, though. Think of it. If he loses, and he loses big in November, this conversation, well, I don't want to say the conversation ends, because, yeah, there's still the matter of the millions of people that support him out there. But maybe they will feel so disempowered that they'll shut up already, or just hide behind the rocks that they apparently live by.
Die off and stop teaching their children their stupid, stupid ways.
Or, you know, inbreed some more and just, I guess, die off.
Yes.
I think that's what we all are thinking. But I don't know. The opposite could happen, though. He could become more empowered. Hillary could do something incredibly stupid, or just get more people angry at her. Or people can say, you know what, I don't like either of them. I'm going to vote for somebody else, and do so to such a degree that it's a toss-up as to who wins. I'll tell you, it's not going to be the third-party candidate. I wish it were. I really do.
Jill Stein or Gary Johnson?
Yeah, those guys. We need a better system. We obviously do. But to protest in this way and affect the election, to swerve it over towards what could be the worst possible outcome, not much of a protest, if you ask me. You know, here in New York, we could probably do it safely. Although, I do want to see that number really, the popular vote, come out strongly against Trump. But I don't know. The question stands. Like, where will we be in a year?
Well, indeed. You know, I thought we would have more of an upset over convention time. The conventions seem to more or less kind of blow over. We're just on into the election. We were... I was anticipating a lot more. I mean, I don't want to say, like...
Steve says as soon as we started talking about Trump, the deer ran into the woods. Ah, boy. Hearing from our friend Steve, upstate New York. That's kind of cool.
But, I don't wish any sort of violence or anything, but where's the uproar going? Mm-hmm. Where are our concerns going? Where is that energy going to be placed? What's it going to take to what form will it take?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, Trump is as surprised as anybody else that has gone this far. Mm-hmm. I really don't think he expected to win. I mean, think about all the people that he was on a debate stage with when it first began. Do you really, I mean, you're supposed to say it when you're a candidate that, yeah, you're the best candidate, you're going to win. But I don't think in his heart he really thought it was going to go this far. He'd make a statement, and then he'd be back at his amazing business doing whatever he does. But instead, it's like some kind of weird parody that just it kept going. And he said it rather aptly that he could kill somebody on Fifth Avenue and not lose any votes. Bit of an exaggeration, but kind of the theme as to what's been going on, because he's been saying some really dumbass things, offensive, being a very nasty person. And it's not making a difference. In fact, it's almost helping him. So, like I said last week, I'm wondering if he really wants to get out of this, and if we would be doing him a service by, you know, kidnapping him and keeping him someplace until after the election so that he can bow out gracefully. Because there's really no way to bow out gracefully by losing, you know. So I don't know what the future holds. But, you know, this week or over the last few days, he's been reaching out to the African American community. What do you think of that?
I would say more like reaching at. I mean, definitely grasping for the African American community, but notably around zero African Americans has he done the reaching. But it, I guess, plays well. A lot of what the commentary I heard was that he was making these gestures, but really it was playing better to the sort of ex-Bernie crowd. It was really a play to those voters to have broader appeal. In other words, you know, by saying those things, those white Bernie voters will jump the Hillary ship and come around to him. Is that weird or what?
Wait, so you're saying...
I am saying that.
You're saying that Donald Trump is reaching out to black voters in front of white crowds to win over more of the white crowds.
Yes.
And not the black voters.
I'm not 100% sure that wasn't on Fox News, but...
Wow. I need to write this down. This is getting really complicated.
Yeah.
Because when he's giving these addresses, they're in front of 99% white crowds, and it's bizarre to see this.
Right.
You imagine if he did appear in front of a black crowd, what would happen? I guess he's imagined that, and the prospect scares him. It would be confrontational. It would not be particularly pleasant for him, but, you know, it would show some courage, some strength of his convictions, if he has any. But it's just kind of it's funny what he's doing now. Do you really think it's winning over Bernie Sanders supporters?
That is one take on it. I have no idea. I think as political currency that could be valued more. I don't want to say that, but by them, I think anything is anything's possible. Who knows how they look at how his team and campaign might look at that, and, you know, as in terms of what needs to be said to get this kind of reaction from people. But by, you know, playing that tune, oh wow, you know, he really is. You see, it's not softening, but. You know, maybe those voters will forget that they're queers or whatever, you know, and be like, oh, well, he's not really that mean to black people, so, you know, he won't...
But he doesn't get them at all. I mean, he basically thinks every black person lives in the ghetto, and everybody is affected by crime.
Oh, totally.
And it's just, I don't know what he is saying the Democrats have done to them over the last however many decades. Basically, they've been lying to them and telling them that... Their lot is improving when it's not, and they're too dumb to figure that out themselves. You know, they need him to come along and tell them that, yeah, you know, you're not doing well.
Well, he wants to characterize it as though the Democrats have not served the African American community, which, you know, the vast majority of are going for Hillary. So to make other Hillary voters again feel like, I guess, sympathy or you know, feel that he's more approachable, that he'll like have that tune. But the construction, I agree, is totally messed up, because
if you listen to the way he talks about African Americans, he's like, the way you're living and, you know, all of this kind of rhetoric that the framing of sounds very much, if you listen to it in a certain way, like us white people live great.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
me,
uh-huh.
you know, but you blacks are living in squalor. And it's just like it brings up this terrible binary, this dichotomy of which we've a very, I think anybody enlightened enough of history, a very close and a keen recollection of. So it's just to hear that is grates my nerves, but I'm sure somebody's nodding their head and adjusting their great again hat.
Yeah, I'm sure it's on Fox News where that's taking place.
Yeah.
Incidentally, speaking of Fox News, I just saw this story on the way over here, which doesn't really surprise me very much. It's about one of those female anchors. I think she's an anchor. Fox News host suing the network for all kinds of unwanted sexual advances from the entire network or whatever. But basically, she's suing Roger Ailes, the former her former boss, who's now out
and advising the president-elect Trump. Somehow that was gave him cred.
If I was writing something to make somebody look diabolical and bad and evil, I would have him hire the person who's being accused of all these horrible things by a conservative news network, by the people who used to work for a conservative news network. And isn't it interesting, too, that the people that are doing this had to leave the network, you know? And that's what Donald Trump said he'd expect his wife to do. If she was being sexually harassed, she should go elsewhere.
Bill Cosby's probably working on his resume right now.
I'm sure there's a spot for him on Fox News, absolutely. Andrea Tantaros described Fox News Network in the lawsuit, which was filed yesterday, and get this, this is a quote, a sex-fueled Playboy Mansion-like cult. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah,
that's apt. The Fox News Network. I mean, that's a better slogan than Fair and Balanced, I think, for them. It's more accurate. Sex-fueled Playboy Mansion-like cult.
And I will say, let's not forget that the Playboy Mansion sold this week.
Did it? I didn't
know
that.
Yeah, finally the mansion was sold, and
did the Mormons get it?
I don't know who is occupying it. I think it's the owner of Hostess, the Twinkie brand.
Oh, come on.
Bought it, yeah.
Wait, what is the relationship between Hostess and Playboy?
I don't know.
Wow. That ruins both of them for me, actually.
Yeah, but that whole concept is a fad that was dated 20 years ago, and it's amazing that's still around. Anyway, go on.
Anyway, so after describing it that way, she also said she complained last spring about Roger Ailes, and one of his top deputies, William Shine, warned her that Ailes was a very powerful man and that she needed to let this one go.
Let this one go?
Well, he paid for those remarks. He paid for those remarks. He was promoted to co-president of Fox News right after Ailes resigned last month. Yeah, so the lawsuit also says Ailes may have been the primary culprit, but his actions were condoned by most senior lieutenants who engaged in a concerted effort to silence Tantaros by threats, humiliation, and retaliation. Since then, other women have come forward alleging they were sexually harassed while at the network. New York Magazine reported that a former booker for the network, Lori Loon, alleged that she'd been sexually harassed by Ailes over a period of 20 years. My God, 20 years being harassed by that guy. Tantra says her lawsuit is meant to give life to the saying that the fish stinks from the head. I never heard that saying before. The fish stinks from the head. Wow. And I guess that makes sense. She also endured unwanted attention from others at Fox's New York City studios. And it goes on. There's all kinds of other former Republican U.S. Senator Scott Brown of Massachusetts, Fox host Bill O'Reilly, neither one of which is listed as a defendant on the lawsuit, but Senator Brown made a number of sexually inappropriate comments to her while filming on set last August and put his hands on her lower waist, you know, Trump daughter style. O'Reilly asked her to stay with him at his Long Island home and told her he believed she had a wild side, according to the lawsuit. You know, so things like this, there's all kinds of allegations, but can you really say you're surprised with a network like Fox, with the kinds of people that they idolize, that they propel up to starhood? We shouldn't be surprised by this. We can say Donald Trump is the problem. Donald Trump is just the symptom. The problem extends all over the place, whether it's sexism or racism or nationalism. These are all things that that are given a lot more power by having this kind of an outlet. You know, it's disturbing.
Yeah, and it's counterintuitive, but it validates it in really contradictory ways. I don't know. So there's a lot there. Anyway, these creeps are involved in that side of the presidential contenders. So, well, ew, gross.
Yeah, you can say that, you know, Trump is reaching out and trying to be nice and reasonable, but
what is he doing behind the scenes, right?
He empowers people, just like Fox empowers people to be slime. You know, they turn a blind eye, nod and a wink, all that kind of stuff. It happens. It's real. It's not just something theoretical. You know, there's an article about Donald Trump staffers. His paid campaign staffers have declared on their personal social media accounts that Muslims are unfit to be American citizens. They've ridiculed Mexican accents. They've called for Secretary of State John Kerry's death by hanging. They stated their readiness for a possible civil war. That's all according to a review of their postings by the Associated Press. AP examined social media and backgrounds of current and former campaign staffers who helped propel Trump through the primary elections. Most come across as dedicated, enthusiastic partisans, but at least seven expressed views that were overtly racially charged, supportive of violent actions, or broadly hostile to Muslims. A graphic designer, for instance, for Trump's advance team, approvingly posted video of a black man eating fried chicken and criticizing fellow blacks for ignorance, irresponsibility, and having too many children. A Trump field organizer in Virginia declared that Muslims were seeking to impose Sharia law in America and that those who understood Islam for what it is are gearing up for the fight. You know, there are all kinds of other examples, and we see them all over the place, not just in this study, but in the mentality, in what goes on at the rallies, in what happens on in the chat rooms, and any place where Donald Trump is being supported. You see this kind of intolerance and ignorance and dangerous hostility basically being given a lot of power. So I'm not surprised, but we need to focus on it more. We need to point our fingers at it. Because this is not normal. This is not something that happens in every campaign. You won't find people like this on the Clinton campaign. You won't find people like this in the Sanders campaign or any campaign, really, except for those people that are fueled by hatred. And, you know, he could be all nice and friendly and backing off on his evil policies as we see them. But these people are still there. These people still have a lot more power than they have without him. So it's something to keep an eye on and not let it go.
Wow. Yeah, I want to see more of this. Like, we have the tools, more analysis, more analytics of the vast swath of information that's out there, the kinds of things like this story showed that are being said by people, and not just what they say, but like what we're getting at here, what they do, the mm-hmm. action, the appointments, the sort of dealing and negotiating and cozying, I mm-hmm. believe, that goes on at this point. The sides being taken need to be shown for what they are.
Well, people think certain things are okay because, wow, look at all the support that Trump is getting. Look at all these people who think like I do. So therefore, it's okay to express myself in a way that would have been unthinkable even 6 months ago because these guys have my back. Here's a story from Virginia. Instead of leaving a gratuity, a couple eating at the Harrisonburg, Virginia restaurant where Sadie Karina Elledge works wrote this: "We only tip citizens." Yeah. that message rattled her her grandfather, because he's, I believe, the owner of the place. She was born in America, but she's of Honduran and Mexican descent. Yeah. And he says, I'd happily do the jail time if I could just get one solid punch in the face of the son of a bitch who paid for his meal at the luncheonette where my granddaughter works and left a receipt for her with a note saying, sorry, we only tip citizens. Now, he's white. He told the Washington Post he's particularly sensitive to slights directed at his multicultural family. After flunking out of college, he spent most of the 80s in Honduras working for the Episcopal Church. He taught English to children in a bilingual school, started a youth program, and met Iris, his the Honduran woman who became his wife. She already had two children, so he adopted them. They returned to the United States. The family settled in Harrisonburg, a Virginia city ringed by three universities. The universities provided a lot of cultural diversity, and he said it's a good place to raise a blended multicultural family. Got six wonderful grandkids. Sadie's the third oldest. Her dad's Honduran. My son and her mother is Mexican. We're a totally bicultural family, a pretty typical bicultural family. In 3 decades in the southern city, they've had few discrimination problems, he said. Once in school, a kid told Sadie to make me a burrito, but it didn't faze her. He says his grandkids are well-adjusted. Sadie plays soccer and posts selfies on her Facebook page. She graduated high school a few months ago and starts community college in a few weeks. His law firm is in the center of town, allows him to dote on his grandchildren. One granddaughter works as a secretary in the firm. Okay, you get the idea. It's like a typical American multicultural family. Then this happens. This happens. It's unbelievable that this kind of hatred is so pervasive and now is gaining strength because they perceive it as legitimate. That yeah, these people aren't citizens. They should. And the thing is, you accept the service. You go to this place and you let people wait on you, and then you judge them because you believe they're too ethnic. They're not citizen-y enough.
And because you're so sure. Which is itself, like, really, I think, overconfident. Like, how could you be so sure? Like, the adage, you know, you don't judge a book by its cover, right? That's just out the window because you're opinionated, because you feel that you're correct in your assumption. You haven't even gotten to know the person. And you have no other concerns about how your interaction with them went. It's absurd.
But even if the person wasn't a citizen, you know, that's my point. You know, you still accepted their service. You still allowed them to wait on you. And then you're going to judge them afterwards and say, oh, you don't deserve a tip because you come from the wrong place. You know, you don't know why they're there in the first place. If you're going to even confirm that they're not a citizen, you know, I've been to many countries and I haven't been a citizen. And if I, you know, if I was asked to step in and be a waiter for a day, which could happen if I'm traveling, I could happen at any time, I would do so, and I'm sure I'd be treated nicely by all the people who were customers. They'd probably ask me all kinds of questions. Where are you from? Tell me about your country. Imagine that happening. Imagine someone actually trying to learn from somebody who's here visiting.
And well, and a lot of this comes from this, when you create a problem and make people feel that there's this repetition in this campaign cycle and in the rhetoric has made people feel there's a problem. I need to, something must be done.
Yeah.
Something must be done. So my little act will be to write this unwittingly to someone.
And they're getting all upset at this problem. What's the problem exactly? The problem is what? This person is serving you food? They're doing a job. What, do you want the job? Do you want to be this person and take all kinds of crap from people all day long? You know, first of all, it's a ridiculous statement because she's a citizen anyway, so it's not even like I'm defending a non-citizen working. But in cases where you have situations like that, where people are doing jobs that nobody else wants to do, how can you not treat them with some gratitude for that? You know, it boggles my imagination, and I don't see what this problem is that all of a sudden is a big deal.
And if you're so concerned about it, why interact with people this way? Why make one person feel miserable in a job that's probably not so great in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
If you have so much concern about this, don't be lazy. Don't be ignorant, right? Affect it where it actually matters instead of this lazy, you know, you don't want to give a tip, don't give a tip. You don't need to write your excuse, your bad excuse.
You should give a tip, Kyle. I mean...
Look,
These people, they survive on tips. You think her grandfather's paying her enough to survive? I don't know.
Right,
think so.
But my point is their excuse is this, mm-hmm. but they're still cheap, right? They're still not tipping.
Yeah.
Right? They might have convinced themselves, well, they, you know, my first criteria was that they're ethnic, so I better not be tipping them. That's checking my bottle there. Yeah, no tip for you.
I want that accent to be associated with, like, Harvard professors. You know, smart people that are saying really intellectually cutting-edge things. I want that accent to be hijacked and taken over by smart people. Because we always use that accent to typify the dumbheads out there.
All right, class, open your books. We're gonna,
come on, we can do it. We can totally do it.
We got some covalent bonds. We're gonna do some stoichiometry here and balance these chemical equations.
I can't do an Oxford accent, but if I could, I'd like to try to use that to say redneck-type things, you know, the opposite. And maybe we can sort of switch the two. Have the Oxford accent used for people who are spouting all kinds of ignorant backwoods rhetoric and the redneck accent. Is that what that is? I don't even know. Is that a right word? Am I offending somebody by saying that?
You just offended the backwoods, and there's no way
I
out of that.
I don't even know who I'm offending. Yeah, so we use that in place of the Oxford accent.
No, you're right.
You know,
right.
Perceptions. It's all about perceptions.
Accent. You know, I know a lot of good. I know there are a lot of good multicultural hillbillies.
No, there are. I know rednecks that are great and smart. You know, to say that a certain type of accent is ignorant, or to say that a certain region is ignorant, ignorant. That's ignorant.
Yep. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Okay, that reminds me of the whole trucker, this whole thing with farmers and repairing their farm equipment, which is a whole other thing with DMCA. We got to get into that.
That's tomorrow's topic.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
DMCA and farm equipment.
Yeah, I want to talk to some farmers. I know truckers, too. Long-haul truckers have all these computer systems in their trucks, and I want to talk to them because I've worked on a heck of a lot of these cars and equipment that is licensing tech, and mm-hmm. there's some cool stuff going on with EFF suing and great action and attention on that.
So tune into Off the Hook tomorrow night before it moves to its new time. But here's, okay, speaking of reactions and assumptions and offenses and things like that, Good Morning America co-anchor Amy Robach has apologized for saying colored people on Monday's broadcast of the ABC program. Her use of the term sparked criticism on social media. During a segment on diversity in Hollywood, Robach, who is substituting for Robin Roberts, noted recent criticism for casting white actors in what one might assume should be a role reserved for colored people. And after the broadcast, she released a statement explaining that she had meant to say people of color. She called the incident a mistake and not at all a reflection of how I feel or speak in my everyday life. The words used to describe African Americans have evolved over time, from words like Negro, colored, Afro-American, to the current black, African American, and people of color. We will update this statement once a week in case it changes. We no longer use the term colored people, although once upon a time that was a term in use. Now the preferred usage is people of color. If you're speaking about people of color broadly, or if you're referring specifically to African Americans, people will frequently be specific and refer to us as African Americans. That's according to a spokesman. Okay, you know what? I got to say, this is kind of silly. I mean, yeah, offensive statements and categorizations are definitely something to take note of. But do you really think this person was out to be offensive? I don't think so. I think white people are kind of mixed up sometimes as to what the actual right way of phrasing things is. And colored people of color, you know, it's pretty similar, and I could see somebody slipping up without necessarily meaning to be offensive.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I say stupid stuff all the time. I say things backwards. I say one thing meaning another thing. I don't know. Wow. I mean, if white people are even talking about black people, or, dare I say, have black people around them,
mm-hmm.
I think even in those, even given that, they're at a loss, right? I mean, congrats for discussing it and even, you know, getting it wrong, right? But I think people should be brave. I mean,
we have a lot going on with language, and it is, like was said, constantly evolving.
Mm-hmm.
We can't be afraid to not, like, to make mistakes and not get our point across, right? And that's a little bit distinct because it's a job, right? She was, like, reading probably a teleprompter or some kind of, like...
Yeah, she probably was reading a teleprompter.
Like a script or something, so... That's a little bit different than, like, if you're... I mean, we don't have a script, so I could say I might have totally misspoke just now and offended myself in the future. So whatever it is, I mean, it's a little bit easier, I think, to mess up than... But also, I mean, if you look at a script, you can read it backwards. I mean, dyslexia is a thing. I mean, you...
Oh, he's going to go dyslexic excuse. Okay, that's good. That's smart.
Look,
that's what her lawyer is probably suggesting.
I think it's... It could be an honest mistake. It could be a slip. How about? I mean, I've had people in my network, older generations, use terms that I didn't really, with my little multicultural upbringing, I didn't really think were okay.
Right.
But you didn't, you know, correct granny necessarily. You just said, you know, Yeah. I mean, we all, I think. We all, that's kind of hard
what,
to
we
say.
All? You can't say that?
We all. No, but I that's a broad generalization, because I don't think all white people have that. But I think that there are definitely white families who've had racist comments and terms and things.
Racist comments, yes. It's easy to zero in on what a racist comment is, an offensive comment, a comment, you know, fueled by hatred.
Right.
That's you know, something that's easy to identify. But to say it the wrong way, I mean, I know a lot of white people who are offended by the term black people. I don't know any black people who are offended by the term black people. I know white people who are offended by the term black people.
Well,
think about that. You know, there are a lot of well-meaning white people who overthink things too much and speak for black people a little too much. And don't listen enough, and that to me is infuriating.
Right, and or they're not really actually saying anything; they're just apologizing for everything. You know, can't get out of their own way with it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, there's certain terms there's terms I don't like getting called too. I mean, it stinks. You know, I don't like the term cracker.
No, I don't like. I've never been called a cracker. No one's ever called me that.
Okay.
But you know, it's something that I could see as being offensive and nasty, but not to the degree of other terms that are used against minorities.
No.
Because that's, you know, we can take some insults as white people. It can bounce off us, and we're able to get through with our lives.
I've been called worse.
Whereas the entire societal structure is biased against minorities, and it has a lot more power.
Fully. So, but I can think of other F words and so on, things that that aren't nice, mm-hmm. you know, to hear at all. But, and, you know, it's out there. It's certainly out there. So we have to, I think, be able to take that a little bit.
You know what I think, though, is more offensive than the term colored people is the term they.
Them,
you know, because you're basically saying all these people are the same. And think about this, you know, when you have conversations with your friends or your relatives, how often does that happen where somebody will say, why did they want this? Why did they act this way? Why don't they see that if they just did this, it would work out better? You know, that to me is really offensive. That is something that that kind of illustrates the sickness in our society where we think it's simple, that it's us versus them, that they all think the same way, and that basically we're better than them.
Well, and this goes right to, I mean, it's one thing if it's an organization, right? You're trying to return something, and it's a company, they, the employees. There. But if you're talking about a religious group, or you don't give them the opportunity to be individuals, okay?
Yeah.
And that straight up right there, you're argument is a fallacy and not going to work because you're not allowing for individualism. But at the same time, go ahead.
No, finish.
So definitely those kinds of lumping groups together like that is problematic and I lost train of thought.
Okay, well, definitely have the conversation. You know, it's better to do that than not to have the conversation. That's all I have to say.
Right. Yeah. definitely have conversation and, you know, be open to different groups. And, I know what I was going to say. What that is sociologically, I think what you would say if you wanted to be academic about it is that you set it up to make black people or whatever the group is, you make them the other. So you're normal, mm-hmm. they aren't. That is why whiteness is flawed. Mm-hmm. It's unattainable, okay? It is a social construction that no one can actually attain, yet we're all made to strive for that wealth or class or being this gender, right? Without gender equality, that is about having a better salary or whatever advantage is seen through whiteness.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we normalize the other, mm-hmm. the Muslim, the whoever, whatever group is being marginalized, the hackers, the youth, that needs a little bit more normalization, because whiteness has been hammered in for so many years as the normal, mm-hmm. and everybody else is the other. And me, personally, I'd rather be the other. I would rather be the black sheep, the different one, the outcast, and on and on and on. So,
good
anyway,
words
that's,
to end on.
That's just sociology for today.
All right, hey, we're out of time. Finn's out the door. OTW@2600.com is our email address. We'll see you next week.
Next up will be fought. And, you know, the idea that...